To the Bumblecast, everyone. I am your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me is the man who brings the dynamics to our dynamic duo, Kyle Krause.
Ah, yes. I see you made an audio joke and a Batman joke there. I like it. I like it a lot.
Like Batman, I try to have everything planned out, everything covered.
Yes, yes. That's true. And you know what they say. With enough preparation time, Batman could defeat anybody.
Exactly. But we'll get to that in a minute. How have you been, sir?
I'm hanging in there. Not too bad. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine, dandy. I'm still riding on a bit of a high, because last week it was announced that I'm going to be working with Mark Wade, the Mark Wade.
That's a name
Archie's
I recognize.
Jughead.
I know that
name.
Yeah.
If you read comics, you probably do.
Yeah, that guy's kind of famous.
Just a little bit.
He's been around for a long time.
And my second episode for Sonic Boom came out last Saturday. So
very nice.
There you go. That's a lot of stuff about me.
It's all about you.
The best thing about being me is there's so many me's.
That's kind of funny that you bring up Mark Wade, because I actually just read my first Mark Wade comic.
Earlier
this week. I read the first six issues, the first collection of his run on Black Widow, which I think he's still currently writing, if I'm not mistaken.
So I'd have to double check myself. I've not read that yet, but the list of things I've not read yet is kind of exhaustive.
Yeah, this one's been on my docket for a while. I was glad to finally get to read it, because it's a really strong book. I enjoyed it quite a lot, so I'm always looking excited for more Black Widow, because she doesn't get enough love in the Marvel Cinematic Universe to me. She needs a movie.
I would watch a Black Widow movie.
I know it would just be like a spy thriller, not that much of a superhero movie. That's okay.
That's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
I mean, Thor hasn't been much of a superhero movie.
I guess that's true.
It's been a long Monty Python gag.
I suppose that's true. Ragnarok may change that, though.
Maybe.
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 Of course, now I have just this mental image of a big paper cutout Anthony Hopkins as Odin coming from the sky. What are you doing now, Thor? Averting my eyes, All-Father. Oh, stop it. It's so depressing.
Anyway, enough about Marvel. Are we ready to talk some DC?
We are, because even though DC has not quite measured up in the live-action cinematic department at all.
Yes, film-wise, yes.
Where they have excelled is in the animation, whether it be television or movies. DC Animated Universe is phenomenal.
Yes.
All right, there's exceptions, but overall...
Overall, yes.
90%.
Yes.
The most recent example being the Lego Batman movie, which, like the Lego movie before it, has no business being as good as it is.
That's very, very true. I will agree with that, 100%.
Now, I'll go ahead and air the wet blanket first. I didn't think it was as strong a movie as the Lego movie.
True, yes.
But it was still bloody entertaining.
Yes, it's very fun. It's a lot of fun. I laughed. Both me and my girlfriend were laughing a lot. It was very much entertaining, especially if you're familiar with some of the tropes and cliches of the Batman universe.
Yeah,
it's got everything in there for you. If you know your Batman, I don't know, Batman super well, I'd say, especially comic book Batman, but there, even then, I was still thoroughly entertained and got most of the references, I think. I probably need another watch through it just to catch some more.
Yeah, I really want to go through it, frame by frame, because some of those big shots that are nothing but Easter eggs, too much to take in at once.
Yeah.
And I think they did a fantastic job of walking that fine line of pushing against the fourth wall.
Yeah.
And being self-referential without being tedious. Mm-hmm. Everything was done super tongue-in-cheek, but without having to turn to the camera and go, hey, we're making a reference. Do you get it?
Yeah. I did quite laugh at the sequence that referenced all the years Batman has gone through some crap. And that would be, every year that there's been a movie.
Well, they had me cracking up really early on when Joker's taking over the plane full of bombs.
Uh-huh.
And the pilot says, so it's basically the two boat thing again. This is better than the two boat thing. Oh, so it's like the big parade with Prince music.
Yes.
It's, anyone, under the age of 30 isn't going to get half of that. But they just roll with it. The fact that they say that they've been fighting for 70 something years.
Yeah.
Without batting an eye.
Yeah. it's just everything is canon. Literally everything. Which is hilarious because it doesn't make any sense for it to all be canon, which makes it even funnier. Also, Batman's unwillingness to remove his cowl. That's kind of hilarious.
You mean his armored headpiece?
Yes, that, yes. I also quite enjoyed, I never felt bad for any of the characters in Batman v Superman, but within the first 10 minutes of this one, I felt bad for a character. And that character happened to be the Joker. It was like, man, this movie is great.
And I really wish they had more of him.
Yeah.
But Billy Dee Williams as Two-Face.
Oh, that too? Oh. Okay. I did not realize that was Billy Dee Williams.
It is. It's Billy Dee Williams. Oh,
yes. Okay, I did not realize that.
And for those
him.
Of you who are listening and are just kind of going, what?
Yes.
In the first, Tim Burton, Batman.
Yeah.
Billy Dee Williams, most famous for his role as Lando Calrissian out of Star Wars, was Harvey Dent. They didn't make a big deal out of it. They didn't, really highlight it because Burton really didn't know what he was doing with Batman as a mythos. But the point was, Billy Dee Williams was Harvey Dent, and I would have loved to have seen him do more Harvey Dent in a Nolan-esque Batman universe.
Kind of going to a Two-Face role. Yeah, that would have been really cool to see.
So. But when he shows up as Two-Face in the Lego movie, it's Billy Dee Williams. He gets two lines, maybe, at max. But it's him.
I miss that. Oh, man, that makes me love this movie even more. I love Billy Dee Williams. I'm really sad he wasn't in episode 7. I hope he comes back.
He'll be in. He has to be.
He has to, yeah.
He
really needs to be. I will agree.
I mean, you get everyone comfortable with Star Wars again, and then you bring in the big guns, Mr. Williams.
yes.
But we'll save Star Wars for another day.
Yeah.
In the big climactic battle for the film, not to spoil too much for those who haven't seen yet, amongst the vehicles flying around is the rubber ducky tank from Batman Returns.
Really?
Yes,
I missed that. I did not see that either. And I've seen Batman Returns many times. it's been decades, though.
I mean, you really do have to go through it again and again. The number of little things, like something that I missed and Leah caught later on looking up some of the Easter eggy stuff. When they're going through all the various bat costumes, one of them is listed as Comic-Con exclusive.
I think all those bat costumes are references, aren't they? They're real costumes?
I'm somewhere. Fairly sure.
They've got to be from somewhere, yeah.
I mean, even if it's like Golden or Silver Age nonsense, I would be surprised if any of them were made up exclusively
for Yeah, women. And no, I like how none of the like none of the villains that seem like they should be made up were actually made up.
Yes! Yes!
And Joker's like, Google it, kids. It's real, I swear. It's like, oh man, that's glorious.
But nerdism aside, what I loved about it, and it's part of what I loved about the Lego movie as well, is that there are moments where the scope of the adventure, the sheer size of it all that's going on, took me back to when I was a little kid playing with toys, and that's how I saw the world. That's what I was imagining. Not necessarily as Lego, but it made me feel like a kid again going, this is how I played with my toys.
Right.
This is authentic. And, oh, that's a wonderful feeling.
The Lego movie had that feeling as well. It's just like, this is just a toy box full of all this fun stuff you get to open up and play with, and it just all comes together. It doesn't matter where it's from, who it is. It's all there, and it's all in your imagination. So I definitely enjoyed that aspect of it too. Some of the designs are really cool. It doesn't really seem like it needed to be a Lego movie, but I'm kind of okay with that because it still looks really good. But they didn't use the building aspect of Lego so much. But since it is a follow-up spin-off to the Lego movie, it makes sense to stick with that.
I think setting it in the Lego universe, for lack of a better term,
sure,
helps you accept the level of nonsense.
That's a good point.
Considering especially the group of villains that Joker recruits at, like, say, Act 2, I don't think that would really work if it wasn't Lego.
That's a good point.
I want that big bat walking tank airplane thing. That was cool. That was rad as all get out.
Yes. I like the car too. This might be one of my favorite Batmobiles or speed wagons.
We're all great.
I mean,
what about the bat kayak?
The what?
The bat kayak.
Oh yeah. That was pretty good too. It's not quite on the level of the Batman 89 Batmobile, but I don't think anything ever will be. But it's close. It's close. Anyway.
Animated Batman overall just seems to be a solid go-to show.
Yeah.
And I'm specifically referencing Batman the Animated Series that spun out of the Tim Burton film.
Mm-hmm.
Which the creators have said, had Burton not taken it to the dark levels that he did, which are camp-tastic by today's standards, but back then, especially since the Adam West Batman was the kind of bar that had been set, it was super dark, and it allowed the show to be extremely mature, even by today's standards.
Absolutely.
I mean, not all of the episodes stand the test of time. There are some duds, especially in season one. Just oof. And going back and rewatching some of the stuff that I remember, it's a fun. It's like, it's a little convenient. Okay, so this isn't quite as brilliant as I remember. But at the same time, they touched on some pretty heavy subjects.
Yeah.
They really did get dark, and some of the animation was just gorgeous.
It's a really good looking show. One of the things I liked about it was a show ostensibly intended for a child audience, but it never, or at least very rarely, like, talked down to kids or treated its audience as someone unable to comprehend more deeper and introspective meaning in things, rather than just, you know, flashing lights and shoving things in everybody's face, which there are a lot of shows that do that now. But don't get me wrong, there's still some great animation that doesn't do that and great kid shows that don't do that now. But at the time, that was kind of a rarity, I think, in children's programming, so I have to admire it for that.
One that stands out in immediate memory, because I recently got on a kick and was like, oh, I need to watch this stuff again.
Mm-hmm.
The first part of the Two-Face origin episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And I really suggest the first part, because that's had the Japanese animation team and was gorgeous. The second half didn't have the same budget and was not as good. But part one, never mind the absolutely brilliant visuals,
mm-hmm.
but they're talking in this one scene about how Harvey's having these extreme anger issues and how he's seeking a therapist. And he point blank says, if my voters knew that I was seeing a shrink, they wouldn't vote for me. And Bruce, as his friend, says, it takes a strong person to seek out help. I'm proud of you for doing this. Huh. And it wasn't heavy handed. It wasn't hand holding. You know, mental health is a serious concern and the people who are dealing with it need help.
Sure, sure.
It was natural between the characters, but it was still a very clear message. And I'm sitting there going, huh.
Yeah.
That went completely over my head as a kid because I was more concerned about, you know, ooh, it's going to be Two-Face.
Yeah. And honestly, though, the fact that that is coming from Batman, of all people, mm-hmm. The loneliest of all loners, the guy who pretty much tries desperately to work by himself as much as he can. Lego Batman movie aside, and its craziness aside, even still, the fact that it's coming from him, that makes it even a little bit more powerful, I think.
Well, that's one of the things that I really like about the animated version of Batman, and this goes through.
Mm-hmm.
The original animated series, Gotham Knights, bleeding over into Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, as standoffish and as brooding as he was, the undercurrent to his character was he cared about people.
Right.
He went out of his way to protect even the villains most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, if you want to talk about a tearjerker, the last episode of season one, Justice League Unlimited, I think, which was the epilogue to Batman Beyond. If you know what I'm talking about, the scene between Batman and Tim, it gets me misty-eyed every bloody time. And if you haven't seen it, look it up. I'm not going to spoil it for you, but it gut punches you out of nowhere, and it's that same level of maturity in the storytelling. Never mind that you've got a man dressed in a bat costume or secret government agencies creating psychic children. That's all fluff. That's the fun. That's the pageantry.
Sure.
But what happens in that moment is just heartbreaking, but it really defines the character. And I think that gets lost in a lot of other media. It gets lampooned fantastically in Lego Batman.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's part of the reason why Batman v Superman was so tone deaf. Well, no, that's not fair. That's not fair. Because one of the things I liked about Batfleck was he did have that undercurrent of protecting the little guy, the average Joe.
Sure.
That gets lost as the movie gets on. But that, I think, is the underpinning of the character. That's why he goes out every night to beat up crazy murder hobos in clown paint, is because he wants to help and protect people. And I don't think that's always remembered.
Right. Yeah, that's very true. Unfortunately, my experience with the DC animated universe is rather limited in comparison to yours. I am fairly familiar from watching the Batman and Superman animated series as a kid, but I still haven't had the chance to sit down and watch either the Justice League movies or Justice League shows or Young Justice or any of the other ones, unfortunately. I really want to watch Batman Brave and the Bold. I don't know if you've seen that one yet. I know it's like just really it's just kind of cheesy and silly, kind of like Lego Batman.
It's outrageous.
I guess. Yeah, it's a little bit more like Batman 66 in tone, kind of.
It is, but with the kind of modern thinking, I guess,
right.
of the series, mm-hmm. it's like Lego Batman. It's tongue in cheek, but it still tells a fun narrative.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, and this is my personal opinion, so take it with a grain of salt. I believe it was three seasons of Justice League aren't necessary viewing. I feel like it was caught in this kind of awkward middle stage as animation moved away from the traditional form of individual cells and painting and more into digital. So it doesn't look great mm-hmm. most of the time. A lot of that early CG airbrushing is just awful.
Yeah.
And I think they were kind of spoiled for what they had because each episode is an hour long. So they treated every episode as this kind of epic two-parter mini movie. And to me, it feels like for the most part, they lost the sense of pacing and importance. And a lot of the voice direction, which is odd because Andrea Romano is a brilliant voice director, but I feel like a lot of the voice direction in Justice League is very stilted. Everyone is very serious. Everyone is very proper.
Mm-hmm.
Justice League Unlimited, when they went back to your regular 26-minute, 22-minute cartoons, I think got them back on track. It was fun again. The growing pains of digital animation were kind of over. And boy, does it get fun, especially since, oh man, the end of season one,
mm-hmm.
the last three episodes, I will watch just because I want to be happy. The stakes that they set and the way everything comes together, it's a culmination of everything from Justice League to Superman to the original Batman all coming together in this one glorious moment, and Flash becomes the greatest hero ever. If you've seen it, folks, and you know what I'm talking about, that running sequence, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Oh, it's good. It's so good. Kyle, it's so good. I'm kidnapping you, duct taping you to the couch. We're watching Justice League Unlimited.
I'm going to do it. It's on Netflix, I believe. I think it's still there, so I really need to sit down and do it.
Do it. Get to the Netflix.
Would you recommend watching Batman, then Superman, then just skipping to Justice League Unlimited, or how would you recommend doing that?
I would, because the stuff that they cover in Justice League is addressed in Unlimited.
Okay.
You can piece together what you missed. And if you, there's, you know, a couple episodes you can go back to if you really want to see exactly what happened.
Sure.
But all you're really missing is like the finer details.
Okay.
Case in point, they introduced Doomsday in Justice League. And what happens in that episode leads to his return in Justice League Unlimited. His return in Justice League Unlimited is so far superior from the effect they put over his voice to his characterization to his fight with Superman.
Mm-hmm.
That really, all you need is like the wiki on what happened in Justice League. Just let it lie over there and go back to the Doomsday Superman fight, because, oh, that's a good one. Oh. And it's another one of those, there's a couple of characters that show up in that episode as cameos, whether by mention or actually physical presence, that date back to season one of the original Batman animated series.
Oh, wow. Okay. So this is all connected.
It's all connected. And I think that's why so many people love it so much and are so resistant to some of the others that have come out, like The Batman or Brave and the Bold or Beware the Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we got with the animated series from Batman to Superman to Justice League to Unlimited is unprecedented. There hasn't been anything like it or since. And sure, there were some misfires and not everyone was great. Father's Day out of Superman is probably the single worst episode out of them all. But as a whole, just the scope of it, the way that it all fits together and the stories that they tell are just so good.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anything else, DC, Marvel, has reached that level.
Huh. So it's just one big comic continuity in cartoon form. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and Batman Beyond. I forgot. That's part of it, too.
Yeah. Oh, is that necessary? Where would you recommend that? At the end? Because since it's in the future, or where it's supposed to be?
Shoot.
Which I think is between like Superman and Justice League.
All right, so if you want my super nerdy opinion on this.
Well, that's why we're here.
Yes, it is. Go through seasons 1 through 3 of Batman the Animated Series first.
Okay.
Because that had the first wave of that style. Then do Superman. It's 2 or 3 seasons? 3 seasons.
Yeah, it's 3.
And intermittently go to Batman season 4, because that's where it all crosses over. You absolutely have to see the World's Finest movie, although that's kind of split between the two series, because that's where it first crosses over.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets you into the feeling of the broadening DC universe that they were creating. Then take a break and go to Batman Beyond, which I'll get to the funny story behind that in a minute. Once you're done with that, watch Justice League if you want, you don't need to, and then jump ahead to Justice League Unlimited, and then it all comes together.
Okay.
Now, the funny thing with Batman Beyond was, like so many other things, it had no business being as good as it was, because the story goes that the show producers were in a room with an executive pitching ideas because they really wanted Justice League. They've been working on Justice League for a while, and mm-hmm. they just could not get it approved. And so one of them said, oh, what about, I don't know, Batman in the future? Some high school kid takes over as Batman. Oh, yeah, that sounds pretty cool. Make it happen. And they went, oh, crap. Okay, so what do we do with this? And they turned it into Batman Beyond, which was this wonderful, refreshing new take on the franchise that, on paper, you know, high school kid discovers Batman's secret lair, becomes new Batman. Sounds fanficky as all get out.
Yeah.
But it works. Terry is a fantastic character. Old Man Bruce is a wonderful take on the curmudgeon that he is. And it sets up enough of this is how things will happen without treading on the past. And then when they go back in Justice League and Justice League Unlimited and knit it together, like, case in point, in Batman Beyond, they introduced a group of villains called the Royal Flush Gang that were all themed about trading cards.
Mm-hmm.
And, playing cards. And Bruce talks about them as these old villains that he used to beat up. Well, up to that point in Batman, they had never shown up. Go into Justice League, which came out afterwards, and they introduced the first Royal Flush Gang.
So, oh, okay, because Batman Beyond's in the future.
Exactly.
Justice League's in the past. I got it.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
Very nice. Very nice. That's pretty cool.
And I guess if you really want to be thorough, there's also Static Shock, which technically ties into the series.
Yeah.
And, oh, there was one other. It was some weird offshoot that had a crossover with Batman Beyond. It was about a robot guy. Zeta Project.
Ah. I remember catching some Batman Beyond episodes, and I think I, like, saw Static Shock once or twice, but never realized it tied into any of that. So, yeah. There's a lot to catch up on.
Yeah, now that you say that, it's kind of exhausting.
Yeah.
But more than anything, I would say Justice League Unlimited, because that is my favorite out of all of them.
Does Young Justice fit in this at all anywhere, or is it kind of on its own? And Young Justice has like a very, very dedicated fan base, and it's supposed to be coming back pretty soon. So.
Yes, it is. Young Justice is its own thing.
Okay.
Brand new take. Don't have to come in with any foreknowledge. If you know about the characters in the comics, obviously you will get a little bit more out of it.
But sure.
It's its own thing. And purely from fan demand, is it getting the Netflix season 3?
Right, yeah.
Which tells you just how good it is.
Yes, and there's, well, the people who made it, they were like, yeah, we really want to make it. Please, someone let us make it.
Now, the thing with Young Justice, to me, and again, my personal opinion, grain of salt,
mm-hmm.
is it tries so hard to be a smarter superhero show that it kind of loses itself from Force for the Trees. There's a lot of, you know, the story goes this far, but it was really part of the villain's plan all along every episode for the first season. You know, they've suffered massive setbacks. The heroes really kicked their butts, but it was really their plan all along. So, okay. And season two has a long con reveal that when it happens is satisfying enough, but you really sit there going, did we really need to spend this much time building up to it? All that said, the animation is phenomenal, the characters are fantastic, and the fact that they're putting so much effort into it really resonates. So for the stumbles that it has here and there, it's a really solid show, definitely worth watching.
Okay. Are there any other DC animated shows that you would recommend? How about the movies? Have you seen any of the more recent movies that they've been doing?
Now, the movies are kind of a mixed bag, and I certainly haven't seen all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Superman Doomsday is one of the worst things I've watched. The only reason I validated the purchase price in my own mind was it came with a documentary of the Death of Superman comic event. And that was fascinating. If you could look that up, do. The movie itself, garbage. Batman Under the Red Hood is one of the best out there.
That's the one I've heard good things about.
The only problem is it falls apart in the last 5 minutes.
Dang it. Why's it got to do that? I hate when that happens.
I mean, and it really hurts because everything literally up to the last bit is so tight and so well done. And it glosses over some of the really stupid things the comic did in such an elegant fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And then literally at the climax, it's like, oh, it's still better than what was in the comic, but you know, that's obsessive point. I think the one that I couldn't find any glaring issue with it at all was Gods and Monsters, which is an Elsewhere story that if you had told me about the premise, I would have rolled my eyes and gone, pass. But it's an Elseworlds story where Superman landed not in Kansas, but in Mexico.
Okay.
Where Batman is, I won't spoil who it is exactly, but is technically a vampire. And Wonder Woman is somebody entirely different from the New Genesis Apocalypse side of things. And it's a more adult-oriented movie. It's really violent. Ooh, it's brutal. But it's really tightly written. The violence is never gratuitous on the side of shock value.
Mm-hmm.
And it just came together really nicely.
Nice. I've heard good things about the also the recent Justice League Dark movie. I don't know if you've had the chance to catch that
one. It just came out. That's on the list.
Just came out, I guess. But I've heard some really good things about that one. And it has Zatanna in it, so my interest is piqued just based on that. Because I love Zatanna. She's great. So I definitely want to watch that one.
I'm trying to think what else. One I'm very sad to hear was not worth the time was Killing Joke.
Yeah, that's what I heard too. And I was kind of disappointed to hear that myself.
And for all the wrong reasons, especially since you had Mark Hamill and Kevin Conroy coming back.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, that's really a shame. I just really find it weird for Batman to be in a relationship with Barbara Gordon. I don't know why. That's one of the things about the Lego movie where I'm still like, I was mostly just confused. Like, why is she older here? I mean,
well, that's because
they aged her up. It's like, okay, well, I mean, that's not a horrible thing, but it doesn't really sit well for me. Cause when I think of Batgirl, I think of being kind of the same age and level as Robin.
Well, that was an invention of the animated series, which we grew up with.
That's probably why.
Way back in the day, during the original run of the books, Batgirl and Batman as a couple was more of the standard with young Dick Grayson, and I mean young Dick Grayson, being kind of the obnoxious kid getting in the way of the two of them.
Okay.
It was who's going to get Batman's attention, the kid or the girl.
Okay, so as a comic. Okay, that was a comic-style reference. A long way
since then.
Okay.
Right. In the animated series, they shuffled it up and they started with Dick Grayson and Barbara Gordon as more equals. And that's where that came from. Okay. The animated series has actually had a huge impact on the comics, be it Dick and Barbara pairing, the invention of Harley Quinn, the likable Mr. Freeze.
Yeah.
Like, funny story, one of the first comics I actively collected was when Tim Drake became Robin, and I got the first four issues of his adventures as Robin. And this was not too long after Jason Todd had his unfortunate run-in with a crowbar. And the big villain was Joker, and of course the tension is, oh god, is Joker going to kill another Robin? Because that's what we come to for our funny books, clowns murdering children. Anyway, first issue, Joker has escaped from prison or has been released or whatever, goes to pick up his old gang, and Mr. Freeze has taken over. Joker kills him with a water gun, using the difference in temperature to shatter the helmet, and just straight up kills him in a panel, and nobody cares, because it was Mr. Freeze, nobody cared. He was a guy with ice powers.
Oh, jeez.
The animated series introduced the entire Nora Freeze sympathetic villain angle and made him what people want today.
Right, yeah. Oh, man.
It's staggering how much the animated series did right and influenced the comics. And we could go on this forever and ever and ever, but I think we're running a bit long, so we should probably move on to some Q&A.
Well, how about we give people some show updates real quick first before we do that?
All right, let's do that.
You want to get into the Bumble Raffle goodness?
The Bumble Raffle is a contest we have every show where listeners win an autographed comic from yours truly. If you are a patron over at patreon.com/bumblecast, you are automatically entered into every show. Otherwise, you need to write into bumblecast@yahoo.com for every show, but you get the same chances of being drawn as everyone else. So, this episode's winner is...
Candy, for now.
I love that screening. Congratulations, Candy, for now. We will be getting in contact with you to see where you want us to send that comic.
Mm, I like Candy, for now. No, I'll always like Candy, I think.
Candy is good.
Yes, Candy is delicious.
We also have an ad for this episode of the Bumblecast, brought to us by our good friend Daniel H. yet again. He'd like to boost Miss Angel Martin yet again for her Etsy shop, Art by Angel. This nice young lady could use some extra cash, and she's got some necklaces you need, because you could always use a necklace, which is really very true. You know, for birthdays, early Christmas shopping, late Valentine's Day shopping, anything. The reasons are endless. So hit the link, which we'll have at the bottom of the episode, and give the sweet gal a helping hand, and get yourself something pretty while you're at it. Go to www.etsy.com/shop/artbyangel.
Very nice. Awesome. All right, I'm ready for Q&A. Are you ready for Q&A, Ian?
I was born ready for Q&A.
This is gonna be one heck of a Q&A session, let me tell you. But first...
Well, please do, because, you know, you're the one reading the questions.
Okay. But first, before we get into the questions, if you want to ask a question, you can hit us up by email using bumblecast@yahoo.com, on Twitter with the hashtag Bumblecast @KyleJCRB or @IanFlynnBKC, or on Patreon with the comments or message system over there. And we'll see it. We'll put it in there. It may be some time before we get to some of your questions, but we've got them. Don't worry. So, and the priority.
If you don't want to wait.
Oh, yes. Sorry. If you don't want to wait, head on over to patreon.com/bumblecast and put in $5 or more per episode or per month. You can decide which. And you will be able to add your question to the Patreon priority Q&A. Where we will answer your question much sooner than we would otherwise. So, we've got some questions in the priority queue right now, so let's get to them. This first one comes from Michael B. After watching the podcast where you talked about how you can't use/look at fan ideas, I wondered how I could avoid giving feedback or asking questions that you can't answer because they're too specific. Say, for example, if I were to address my interpretation of a character and talk about how they might act in a hypothetical future scenario based on that interpretation.
Okay, so...
basically,
I can understand... And I know where they're coming from. It's just how to quite address it. It's
basically, where's the line?
Yeah. And it's sometimes fuzzy, which is really frustrating both for you and for me. Because I want to be able to be as informative and direct in my answers as I can.
Sure.
How some people view the characters and how I view the characters aren't always going to sync up. And sometimes that's just a matter of differing opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if it's a matter of, you know, I like character X, and if they were to be put into a scenario where they had to deal with some, I guess it's more, see, that's what's tricky about it, is that, you know, if you say they're in a room with a bomb, that's fairly broad, because how they got into that room with the bomb could be a number of reasons.
Sure.
But it's also a very specific peril. You know, if you say the character is thrust into a situation where they are now in the middle of the ocean. Again, tons of options of how they got there, but it's still a very specific scenario. So I'm not entirely sure how best to broach those subjects. I think it would be better just maybe not to. I hate to say that, but it's better to cast a broader net. Like, how do you think the character would handle a very high stress situation? How would they handle a betrayal within the ranks? How would they deal with family death or something like that? As broad a net as you can cast, because then there leaves a lot of room for speculation and spitballing. But if it's like, what if this specific character went on this specific mission and wound up in these specific circumstances, it's too much. That's basically writing a plot line at that point.
Sure.
I don't know
sure.
if that really answers the question, but it, like I said, it's kind of fuzzy.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we got one more Patreon priority question. This one comes from Andrew F. How hard was it to adjust from writing comics to writing the Sonic Boom TV show?
It wasn't seamless, I'll say that. How you write for a screenplay for television is not the same as you would write for a comic, in part because of how comics are paced versus how television is paced, in part because I was far less directly involved in the TV episodes as I was the comic. Because with the comic, I'm, you know, direct coordination with the editor and sometimes with the pencilers, and, you know, we can get down to the nitty-gritty panel-by-panel thing.
Mm-hmm.
With Sonic Boom, I submitted my script, and that was it. Now, if it had any adjustments, if it was revised, I didn't know. What the episode director decided to do with it, that was up to them. You know, it was kind of weird not to be so hands-on for once. Which also kind of fun, because, you know, when the episode comes out, it's like, oh, that's neat, they changed that. Oh, that's neat, they added that joke, or something like that. So, it's been different. It was an interesting learning experience. Had to get a whole new piece of software because you can't just do it in Word, apparently.
I forget what it's called, but yeah.
Something like Final Script. It's been a while since I've had to boot it up.
Yeah, yeah.
But the fundamentals of it, you know, the pacing of how to tell a story with a beginning, middle, and end are the foundations of writing for anything.
Sure. How about, would you say that being a comic writer is more of sort of a combined writer and director type of thing, kind of directing the pencilers what to draw? I mean, they still have their freedom to within that space, but you know what I mean, I think.
Yeah, but I think that would vary from book to book.
Oh, sure.
Because, you know, if you have an editor who's more hands-on, they might be more direct in how things should go. You know, some books, it's the editor says, this is how I want you to write it, and you write it. Others say, you're the writer, write it, and I'll just make sure everything gets done on time.
Sure.
And, you know, you get free rein. So it really varies from project to project.
Huh. Okay. I was just curious if that was kind of how it goes in general, or if that's just specific to kind of how you end up working or anything like that. So... all right, and that's it for the Patreon Q&A this week. Let's get into some standard Q&A. This first one comes from Andrew D. The recent Sonic Universe issues seem to indicate that the Sonic 2 8-bit adaptation leads directly into the Tails Adventure adaptation, but that it takes place after the Sonic 2 16-bit game. My concern with this is that the Silver Sonic used in the 8-bit comic adaptation that attacks Sonic in the Scrambled Egg Zone was confirmed to be a prototype. If that's the case, then which was the version that attacked Sonic on the Death Egg before he fought the Death Egg robot? And if it was more advanced, then why did Eggman use the prototype afterwards? Or was the robot Sonic aboard the Death Egg instead of Mecha Sonic like in the games? Can you explain the chronology of the Sonic robots in this new timeline? And while I'm at it, at what point do the Dulce and Lupe flashbacks take place in relation to the games? It's a very long question. And
it's in depth, but
it's multiple questions. Technically.
It is, but I haven't had the chance to outline how the chronology works like I was hoping I would, so I can understand some confusion.
Sure.
So basically, it goes Sonic 2 happens. And as Genesis of a Hero shows, Eggman gets grabbed by the Time Eater from Generations. And because of time travel shenanigans, we'll wind up right back on the Death Egg in time for Sonic CD, Sonic 3, and Knuckles, and all that jazz. Because time travel is fun!
I like time travel. It's weird.
In between Sonic 2 and Sonic 3 and Knuckles, which, you know, the games never specify quite how long it was, I don't think. And even so, this is the comics. We're doing our own thing anyway. We have Sonic 2 8-bit, and a number of the other Game Gear and Classic Era stories. The robot on the Death Egg was Silver Sonic. That's how we're treating it in the comic. The Silver Sonic prototype that was teamed up with Breezy was used because he didn't have anything else at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And whether or not you want to say Sonic 2 8-bit happened before Sonic CD, meaning that Metal Sonic was in production, or after Sonic CD, meaning Metal Sonic was trashed, doesn't matter. He needed a robot Sonic. He didn't have anything. He pulled the prototype out of the closet and threw it out there. Now, where a lot of the classic adventures fall, I'm leaving that kind of nebulous at the moment, because that's how a lot of the classic games go.
Yeah.
And because I want to keep that kind of spirit of free adventure with it. I feel like if we get down to a nitty-gritty, this happened exactly this month and this week and this day, blah, 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 it takes away from that kind of classic feel. It happened back then. We know they happened. We're pretty good.
Yeah. They happened at some point.
Right.
In history.
When you get to the modern era, things are a little more tightly structured, or you can at least make a case for a stronger linear timeline.
Yeah.
But that's the modern era, not the classic.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that is probably sufficient, I hope. And this next question, speaking of length, comes from Sparky.
Maybe take a drink of water first.
Yeah, I want to make it appeal kind of to you guys out there asking questions for brevity. I mean, we appreciate the questions. And we really appreciate that you guys really get into this much depth. But you know, if you could make it just a little shorter. So I'm going to read this one in full. Just
to
because.
Illustrate our commitment.
Yes, that's it. Yes, we are committed. So I'm going to read this one in full, no matter how long it takes me. So,
all right. Here buckle we go. In, buckaroos.
Here we go. It's one question from Sparky. In the games, Sonic is the fastest thing alive. The blue speed type classification is based on him. No one is faster than Sonic, except Metal, according to some profiles. And only Shadow is able to actually match and equal Sonic speed. But Knuckles is as strong as Sonic is fast. The red power type class was based on the Rad Red Echidna, and he's the mountain to Sonic's wind. The other red powerful character is, as you know, Mighty the Armadillo, who was strongly hinted and implied to be the power type in Sega Sonic Arcade, alongside the Yellow Ray, who is implied to be the flying type, the classification based on tails. So we know Mighty is strong, but I want to ask, why is it that you write Mighty as the strongest thing alive, stronger than Knuckles, when it's the last echidna that is supposed to be the definitive main strongest power type to rival Sonic, the definitive main fastest speed type, and also why apparently characters like Big and Bark are also played up to be just as strong, if not stronger than Knuckles in the comics, downplaying Knuckles' own power type significance. I mean, if Mighty is stronger than Knuckles in the comics, does that make Ray a better, faster, more agile flyer than Tails? I'm sorry for the length of this question. Something I want to add is that Knuckles being a master of martial arts, as well as being the last of a warrior clan, is sort of meant to emphasize Knuckles' own strength, so it bothers me a little when you say or imply that Mighty is stronger than stronger, but Knuckles is the better fighter.
Okie dokie.
There we go.
So, actually, I missed that. Would you mind reading it again?
No, I would.
Okay, so the first thing to do to address this is to say that the power levels are not one-to-one metrics.
They are all over 9,000, though.
Yes.
Okay.
Just the speed flying power type is a nice trio for heroes, but it doesn't withstand the series outside of that, really. Amy especially has been classified as a number of different things, and given the power of her hammer, she counts as a power type. She's never been fast, except she's a speed type for heroes.
For hero, yeah, Sonic Heroes.
What was her classification in Sonic Chronicles? Was it like the support type ability?
I'm not 100% certain. I've played very little Chronicles.
So it's saying that, you know, someone is classified as a speed type or a flying type or a power type doesn't really fit, because it only really applies to that one game. It falls apart if you go beyond that. Like, say, would you count Blaze as a power type because she has extremely powerful fire attacks? Or is she a speed type because she can run just about as fast as Sonic? Or does she count as a flying type because she has that hover move with the fire jets? You know? What does Silver count as? Is he a power type because he can lift small moons? Is he a flying type because he can fly around by psychokinesis? It's a nice metric within the context of the games, but it doesn't really work if you look at them as natural beings.
Yeah, it's
secondly,
you're looking at gameplay versus story, and that secondly, doesn't always hold up.
If you retroactively apply power and flying to Mighty and Ray, that already doesn't work, because that's not how they were being thought of with Sega Sonic Arcade.
Right.
They didn't really have any different play types, just different animations. And if you want to get down to it, the only other time that you play as Mighty, he's the Sonic clone. He's a Sonic sprite, just remastered. So he's more of a speed type there. So if you just go straight down to this is what the game mechanic says and look at nothing but that, it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having Mighty be stupidly strong is something that sets him apart from the other characters. Saying that, well, let's tie this back into the DC stuff. A debate that goes on all the time is who is faster, Superman or the Flash? If you have Superman be faster than the Flash, what's the point of Flash?
Right, yeah.
The point is, he's fast. Just because, even if you say that they're equals in terms of speed, which they are, that Flash is faster, fight me.
As he should be, because matter. He's the Flash.
It doesn't diminish one or the other. So having Mighty technically being more raw physically strong than Knuckles doesn't diminish Knuckles' importance to the series. If anything, it's a prop to get Mighty to stand out, because Knuckles is the last of his kind, thus making him more important than Mighty. He is a master martial artist, which puts him ahead of Mighty, who's just a brawler. He guards the Master Emerald, which is super important, and Mighty is just kind of there. So if anything, giving Mighty the extra nudge of making him super strong, or at least one of the strongest there is, gives him something to be other than the red guy who's strong.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Giving Big the same level of ridiculous strength is just funny.
Yeah. Of course.
Bark, I'm not sure where he fits in this because he's just a bruiser, you know? If nobody else can be strong just so Knuckles can be strong, that defeats the entire purpose of having any kind of adversary.
Right.
So, it's having Mighty be the strongest one there is, which I'm not confirming, settle down, does not take Knuckles off of his pedestal.
Mm-hmm.
Knuckles remains part of the triple threat. He is still far more important to the overall narrative than Mighty, and just because he maybe can't bench the same amount doesn't make him any less important or any less cool or any less effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of what I was just thinking was like, just because Sonic is the fastest thing alive and is classified as the blue speed type doesn't necessarily mean that the other characters are equivalent to Sonic's speed. So, like, Knuckles is not necessarily the strongest ever just because Sonic is the fastest ever, even right. though they both have that. They both have classifications for that. So
that's what I'm saying. It's not like a one-to-one ratio.
Right, exactly.
It's not Sonic's speed equals X amount of, therefore, Y amount of strength is the same proportion amount of oomph. I feel like I need a lab coat and a board over here. If you see here, when you calculate the amount of the speed and oomph, it is exactly proportionate to the amount of zoom in the flank. No.
Okay, Dr. Wily.
Quite von Schlemmer. That's not how it works.
Okay. Or that.
Sonic's fast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess it was more von Schlemmer. Yeah. Okay.
It's either a very bad Von Schlemmer or a very bad Ludwig von Drake.
Or maybe Dr. Scratch and Sniff.
Well, that's just silly, because he's a psychiatrist.
I guess that's right. Yeah, never mind. a psychiatrist.
There we go.
That's what it is. Okay. I'm bad at this. Maybe you need to see a psychiatrist.
Oh. We could go for days about my baggage. We get stuck in airport with that.
Oh, man. I probably have months worth. Anyway, does that answer this question satisfactorily?
I hope so.
We went off on that tangent. Okay. And the last question this week comes from AKessel92. Just how strong are General, the Witch Carters, the Hooligans, and the BBA? Because a few didn't like the results of the fight.
Yeah, we're back to power levels.
Yeah.
And I always said Gimeral. I like the harder G.
Gimeral, I don't know. Whatever, either one. It doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, if he's based off of Emeril, whose name came from Chaos Emerald, I guess Gimeral makes more sense since it harkens back to Jim.
I don't know. I thought Emeril was just the chef guy. Who says, bam!
You can take it up a notch.
Kicks things up a notch. That's right.
See, part of me knew that bit of Panic in the Sky wasn't going to settle well because Gimeral is supposed to be stupidly powerful. But folks didn't take into account that he didn't just get taken down by one person. He fought Metal Sonic. He fought an army of badniks. He fought the Hooligans, and he fought the Witch Carters all by himself.
I was going to say, he was on his own for and against a slew of people for that fight.
And the entire tactic wasn't to beat him. It was just to hold him back long enough for Metal Sonic to escape, because Metal Sonic is stupid fast.
Right.
So Gimeral didn't really lose the fight so much as he got kind of delayed.
Mm-hmm.
But so it goes. In terms of rough power levels, I suppose, if you want to strap on your scouter, Gimeral is way up there in terms of potential power. The Witch Carters by themselves just normally aren't terribly strong. I'd equate them to something like the Hooligans. But because they're under mind control, they are somewhat amplified and they don't respond to pain and other stimuli the same way a normal person would, giving them a little bit of a nudge over your average combatant.
Mm.
Most of the forces within the Battlebird Armada are mooks. They are there to be fodder. Speedy, however, is an extremely capable soldier, especially when he's got Dr. Fukurokov's augmentations. And then the Battle Lord is just something else altogether. You can ask him what he is, and he will answer, perfection.
Nice.
And the hooligans are not particularly powerful in their own right, but they're comparable enough to what Sonic and his friends can do. They're not mountain bench pressers like Mighty, but Dean could potentially be, you know, a world-altering force if he had two brain cells to rub together. So there's no hard and fast line of this guy could beat this guy. It's not a simple one-to-one metric. But, you know, they're powerful enough to give our heroes a run for their money, but they're not so powerful as they would overthrow the main villain.
Okay. This is a very comic book episode. Just in general. I mean, I know we're talking about Sonic comics, but I mean, it's just making me think of, like, the arguments of superhero power levels.
Yeah.
Superhero and supervillain power levels. It's like, you know, come on, guys.
Sometimes it's fun.
Yes, it's fun to speculate, but convenience of the story. Sometimes.
Unless it's the, you know, Goku Superman argument, in which case it's Goku. It's pretty clear. Come on.
Probably.
Fight me.
Probably. Anyway, that's going to do it for this week's Q&A. Anything we need to get to, Ian, before we head on out of here with the plugs and the shout-outs?
Not on my end. How about you, sir?
Nope. Don't got nothing. Wait, that's a double negative. I don't have anything. There we go.
What I have, though, is a list of all the wonderful patrons who support us for every single episode. So let's give a shout-out to Daniel H., Zephyr Flame, Damo, Duas Dizdin, John B., Sam Cybercat, Deus Miles, Mike B., Fancy Fool, Connell T., Samuel B., Justin G., Jennifer R., Candy, for now, Alex F., John M., S. Yavarovich 9X, Alex P., and James K.
Candy, for now. You need to take that comic and read it. Or not. You don't have to read it, I guess. You can just admire it. You can just admire it. You can look at it. It's cool. Anyway, patrons, you are awesome. We love you.
We do. From the very deepest of our hearts.
Yes, from the black pit of my heart. I love you.
You bring a bit of light to that dark part in Kyle's heart.
It's hard to do, but you manage.
I actually believe there's like a little bean sprout growing there because of all that light.
Now, what is this, Undertale? Come on, come on.
It's not being papyrus.
Yeah. Anyway.
Are we going to have a nyek off? Is that how it's going to go?
No, you'll win.
Darn Skippy.
Anyway, let us know where we can find you on the interwebs, Ian.
You can find me at bumbleking.com or online at IanFlynnBKC.
And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at KyleJCRB, and you can find what I'm doing at KNGI.org, where you'll find archived episodes of this show and many, many others, including the show that I host live every Saturday over at 8bitx.com called Game Fuel at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're interested in hearing some awesome video game music remixes, including music from Sonic and Mega Man, of course, you'll want to tune in for that. Or you can just head on over to kngi.org and grab archived versions of it. So that's going to do it for this edition of the Bumblecast.
We'll see you next week for the next episode of Bumblecast Gaming, where FTL starts to go off the rails, and then in 2 weeks for the next episode of the Bumblecast.
All right, Bumblecast. It's time for the Bumblecast to end. Bye.
Have a good night, everybody.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Bumblecast. If you like the show, be sure to hit that subscribe button and consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some great rewards as well as big plans to make the show even better. Also, rate and review the show on iTunes. It gets more folks listening and really helps us out, so we definitely appreciate it. Original music by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more of his music at bc.s3m.us and find the theme song at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com, available as a pay what you want download.
Bumblecast, episode 37, in 3, 2, 1. Wait, no. Hold on.
I was waiting. I had my... I was tensing up, like, here we go, nope.